Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Lob podcast with These Football Times. I'm Aidan Williams and today we're discussing the latest club to get the TFT magazine treatment, possibly less globally renowned than some of the clubs we've focused on in previous editions, but the history and stories to tell are as rich as any we've covered.
To say that Leeds are playing for Southampton is the understatement of the season. For Southampton, just don't know what day it is. Every man jack of this Leeds side is now turning it on. Oh, look at that! It's almost cruel. The Allen Road crowd are lapping it up. With the second home match running, Leeds United are turning on a brilliant show and the other team are just not on the park. Even when a pass goes astray, they can pick it up. It's got to feel some sympathy for Southampton. The gap between their position and Leeds is an almighty chasm.
So Leeds United are our subject, among the best supported clubs in England, of course, a large following that has stayed loyal to the team through some rather lean times in recent years, but they're now being rewarded with some fine football and a return to the top flight under the enigmatic Marcelo Bielsa. Marching on together with me today, see what I did there, are three great guests, all with a strong perspective on Leeds United. We've got a pod regular in Paul McParland. He's an Evertonian, of course, but one who spent quite a lot of time in Leeds in the 70s, I believe, Paul. I'm picturing long-haired student flares and all of that.
Oh, yeah, fabulous times, Aidan. Yeah, definitely the long hair. And it was a good time to be in Leeds because, you know, I started studying Leeds in September 1973. So I was there for that 73-74 side. But, of course, I'd seen Leeds a number of times before that, playing at Goodison Park. And I think there was a bit of history between Everton and Leeds at the time as well. There were certainly a few battles between the two sides. But, yeah, good days. And I really enjoyed my time watching Leeds.
And I guess the time now is ideal for us to focus on them with their hipster credentials and general popularity of bigger heights than possibly they did in the 70s. So we'll get into some of that, I'm sure. So while you, Paul, may be a bit more Bremner, Giles and Hunter, and my Leeds memories are more Gordon Strachan, Lee Chapman and David Batty with the 92 league winners. So we can account for some of the fine eras of the past, but we've got the present well represented too. By way of introduction, though, for Joe and James, I'm going to ask them both to briefly tell us their earliest Leeds recollections and when the love of your club began to grow. Sorry to throw this at you from nowhere, but James, coming to you first, welcome to the pod. When do your Leeds memories begin?
Yeah, well, mine are firmly rooted in the O'Leary era, certainly when I fell in love with the club. If my accent isn't a giveaway, I'm not from West Yorkshire. I'm from the North East. You would never think, but yeah, by way of sort of petulant rebellion towards my dad and David Batty, who was probably as a 5-year-old my favourite player at the club. I don't really know how it started, but my only memories are following Leeds once the bug bites and you start going to Elland Road. That was, so yeah, the first, the team that I fell in love with was very much the O'Leary team. And from there, I've paid for my sins with 16 years of heartache, but it looks like it's finally coming full circle again.
Exactly. The good times back at last. And Joe Brennan, welcome to you too. Well, how about you, your earliest memories of following Leeds?
Yeah. Hello, everybody. My earliest memory, really, growing up in one of the local areas next to the ground, is actually getting ready for PE when I was about 6 or 7 years old. and having Rio Ferdinand walk into the classroom unannounced as we were all getting changed, just to say hello to everybody. And yeah, when you're a bright-eyed young lad and one of the stars of English football comes in, that sort of leaves an impression on you. And then he subsequently left Leeds rather than just leaving an impression on me. But yeah, it was growing up and hearing the noise of Elland Road from my garden and just having Elland Road next to my house was the thing that made Leeds a part of my life, really.
Yeah, I guess in those circumstances, you didn't have a choice at all, did you?
I didn't really have a choice. No, you're right, exactly. It's told to you that you're a Leeds fan rather than it being an active choice that you make. But yeah, it's one that for now is serving me well, but for the majority of my life hasn't really been. Been something of a bit of regret for most of my life, if I'm being honest.
Well, yeah, plenty of us can say the same. A bit about Leeds as a club to begin with. I mean, to both James and Joe, as the Leeds fans here, I mean, I've talked on pods previously about my club, Newcastle, as having a different feel to many others as a one-club city. Leeds is, of course, another prime example of that, and possibly a bigger city for it as well. One club representing it. I'm not sure how easy this is to answer, but is the club seen as a representation of the city and region? I guess Joe, being the local, come to you first on this. Is it a uniting factor? Does the city come together when the good times, you know, maybe there haven't been so many lately, but is it a uniting factor to the city being the one club city?
During the good times, it definitely is. You know, nothing, when you leave your house and leave in a good moment or a good position, you can definitely feel it on the street, despite that being one of the biggest cliches in football. You can definitely feel the mood of people swing depending on the result, especially being so close to the ground. It is something that brings people together, you know. If you wear a Leeds shirt on the street or you've got a sticker on your car or something typical like that, it will, during the happier times, get a reaction from people. During the negative times, not so much, but yeah, it's definitely something that brings the people of the city together, being from Leeds.
And how about you, James? Obviously, it's slightly distant for you. Is it a slightly different experience then, or is Leeds as a representation of this still working the same kind of way for you, even though it's not quite the same of walking down the street with your shirt?
Yeah, well, it certainly does work the same way. And as someone that attends a lot of matches, to see the change in just the town centre and like on a match day in the Bielsa era, it really feels like the city is a representation of the club, in the sense that the way Elland Road and the way the fan base has become mobilised, you can feel that just going around the city on match days. And I think Leeds, possibly in large because of the success they had under Reevey, but it has maintained a strong fan base outside of Leeds, worldwide, but certainly in other parts of the country. And you get that at Elland Road. It's not just, you know, it's not, you'll get people from all over there. And I think that certainly in Leeds, but just in the Leeds fan base generally, the atmosphere and the enthusiasm is totally dependent on how the club's doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could be the same for up here in the Northeast too, isn't it? You know, downbeat, yeah, when things are bad. But before we get into some of the magazine topics, mind Paul, a little on Leeds, and I guess the reverse of what Joe and James have been talking about. You know, there is a general perception, I would say, amongst neutrals to be a bit negative towards Leeds at times. And I think it's probably fair to say they're quite an opinion splitting club. Rather than sort of universally loved when it comes to neutrals. Is this down to a number of contentious rivalries that they have? Obviously, there's Man United and Chelsea, given history. You're mentioning some feisty clashes with Everton in the past and other Yorkshire teams too. Is it to do with the 70s era robust style and rubbing people up the wrong way under Don Revie? And obviously, we'll get into that era in a little more detail in a sec. But what do you think is behind that sort of opinion dividing that Leeds causes?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, that, because, I mean, from my perspective, I suppose I have the advantage of not being a Leeds fan, so I can be a bit more dispassionate about things, but I always thought that Leeds United got a really, really poor treatment from the media. I think, you know, the label of Dirty Leeds that was attached to them, on what basis it was detached, I'm still unsure, because you have to think, growing up in the 60s, Match of the Day and Yorkshire TV highlights were the only access to football. Now, Yorkshire TV wasn't broadcast in the Investing ITV network. Match of the Day didn't feature Leeds United that often. But suddenly, the London media in particular got it into their heads that Leeds United were a dirty side. I think you could make a case that Don Revie was possibly the first manager to understand the importance of systems and tactics to get results, and he built his Leeds side to get results. And a lot of these so-called footballing purists, particularly in London, just couldn't cope with these teams that went out to win rather than entertain. And, you know, given the situation, I mean, James and Joe are quite lucky because they've grown up knowing Leeds as a big team. When I grew up, Leeds were not a big team. You know, it was a rugby league town. They were a team that hadn't won anything. And so the achievements of Don Revie, who took a side in a rugby league and Yorkshire cricket stronghold, averaging about 11,000 a match, and turned them into one of the powerhouses of Europe without spending a great deal of money, to me, was just an absolutely fabulous achievement. And, you know, he's always kind of suffered from these sort of insinuations about, you know, bribery and things like this. But, you know, I'm always a firm believer that you're innocent until proven guilty. And as far as I can see, there's been not one shred of convincing evidence that stood up in court to even support the allegations that were made. And, you know, we're talking, you know, 40 years now since, you know, nearly 50 years since Lee's last title. So I always thought they got a really, really poor press. And I had some sympathy with them because certainly, you know, I know looking at Everton, when we won the league in 62-63, we were divided as the Merseyside Millionaires because we bought the title. And Leeds were kind of divided as this team of oiks who played carpet bowls, and, you know, they weren't the glamour club like Chelsea where Vaco Welch going to watch them every week. You know, if you look at Leeds, Ronnie Hilton turned up to watch a game, you never got Vaco Welch there, or maybe Hill Dogden, I don't know. And there was this kind of thing about Leeds that there were these dour northerners, and the Southern pressures never, ever got Leeds United. And some of the players Leeds had in that side with, you know, were outstanding footballers. You've got Bobby Collins, who won Football of the Year at the age of 34, 35. I mean, what a fabulous achievement that was. And, Leeds were different. Leeds learned quickly. They learned how to get results quickly, and they learned that you don't always win league titles by playing pretty football. And I think that image bound the team together and bound the fans together as well. So from my perspective, you know, Leeds, if Leeds had been based in London, they wouldn't have the reputation they had today. That's kind of my point, really.
That's probably right. I mean, I guess these perceptions have little relevance today, Joe. But, I mean, do you find this old attitude irritates Leeds fans, or is it a badge of honour?
I find it something that when it comes up from the media or from opposition fans, it's something that Leeds fans definitely latch onto as a part of their identity. Well, maybe not so much now with Bielsa's football. We've seen sort of a move away from the dirty Leeds moniker, but definitely a slide tackle or a last-ditch challenge was something that would get the fans going and was something that would really get people off their seats when goals weren't flying in. So you could see that the dirty Leeds brand or the dirty Leeds name is something that has carried on from the Revie era. But picking up on what was just mentioned there with Revie in terms of being one of the first tacticians, he was also one of the first managers to do opposition analysis to the depth that he did. So he's famous for the Revie dossiers, which is something that is kind of parallel to Bielsa now, or maybe even Mourinho. And he would send out his coaching staff or his team to go and scout the opposition. And this was something that in that period was just not done, or not done to the extent that Revie was doing it. Like the typical thing of slapping a 20-page document on the desk on Saturday morning for the team to analyse was something that happened because of Don Revie's influence and impetus in the club. And I think it's exactly right talking about Leeds as a rugby or a cricket city as well. Football wasn't drawing in the crowds. Even when you go back to Leeds' inception as a club from Leeds City, they were talking of merging Leeds United with Huddersfield Town because the want for a big football team wasn't there in Leeds, because everybody was going to Hunslet to watch rugby, or were going to Headingley to watch Yorkshire cricket. So Leeds really turned from a rugby and a cricket city into a football city under Revy, and he was the man who really brought the people in and really took over the people's imagination using this Dirty Leeds moniker that has carried on until today.
All right, James, come to you on this. I take it the perception that you probably quite well positioned to get the outsider's perception as a Leeds fan when you're surrounded by others. Do you think the perception now is very different to what it was? The sort of stereotypical Dirty Leeds?
I think in a strange way, the reputation, if you will, it sort of transcends whatever the club is doing at the time. So because it's so entrenched, the Dirty Leeds moniker, it's in many ways it's banter amongst fans, but there is a genuine distaste across the country from certain sections of fans about Leeds. And I think that the Bielsa era for me has sort of has really proven how I think we'll always be part of Leeds, because in many ways the lack of pragmatism, the way Bielsa plays, the complete emphasis on style is almost the antithesis to what the Dirty Leeds basis was formed on. Yet even in that, we somehow still manage to ruffle the feathers with whether it's Spygate. It doesn't matter what the situation is with the club or the personnel, there's something in the air that'll find a way to mutate the Dirty Leeds ethos into a new form to suit the time.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah. In a stylistically utterly different time, there's still things that can be latched onto the perception if people want them to.
Yeah. But anyway, if I could jump in.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a famous Leeds match in the 60s where Leeds beat Southampton 7-0. I'm sure the video is a popular video amongst Leeds fans. I'm sure James and
of course, yeah,
absolutely. I've seen it as many times as I have, but the play there is nothing like how you would imagine a team called Dirty Leeds to play. The back heels and Rabonas and Flicks, and Leeds are just playing like the prime team of any era. Yet in the papers the following day or on the week after, it was unsportsmanlike and unfair to win 7-0 against the team. So there's sort of something, I don't want to talk about everybody's against Leeds, because that's just everybody's against everybody if you're not a fan of their team. But there must be something there that says Leeds are a team not to be liked by general consensus. You know, I think there's something in that, because even when you win 7-0, you can still be called unsportsmanlike.
I'd agree, Joe. I mean, if Man United had done that, for example, with George Best and Dennis Law, you'd be getting played ad infinitum these days. And it was later than what you think, that game. It was 72-73 season. It was the year that started in Leeds.
Yeah, 73, yeah.
And there's about a 5-minute section where Bremner and Giles are flicking the ball, doing back heels, and absolutely toying with Southampton. It's absolutely footballing masterclass. And it was kind of the first time, I think, that the watching public saw what Leeds could be like when Revy left them off the leash. And I think it was the first indication there of what that 73-74 championship side was going to be like. Because you just saw absolute confidence, absolute skill level. Every player knew what the other player was going to do. And I think, you know, it's a fabulous piece of footballing to watch. And, you know, I'd like to see the counter evidence of clips of Dirty Leeds. You know, there's a fabulous clip there of superb football that, as you say, doesn't get the credit it fully deserved at the time and deserves now.
I guess if you think about that infamous cup final they had with Chelsea, where, you know, there were things going on left, right and centre, but, you know, Leeds may have got the bad rap for it, but Chelsea were equally guilty in most of it. From what I've seen, it does seem like preconceived ideas were behind a lot of all that. But
yeah, exactly. And also, sorry to put it in again, but no. Chelsea had Chopper Harris, who wasn't exactly such a total footballing guy, was he? You know, Eddie McCready was the choice of taking people out. Peter Osgood, ever since Evan Hughes broke his leg in the mid-60s, was always determined to get his retaliation in first. So yeah, I mean, you know, Chelsea were as good as it, you know, really stood up and could dish it out as well as take it.
Exactly, not quite just the West London sophisticates that they were made out. But
I do wonder if the players and the fans as well, the ambivalence to the tag has perpetuated further. The fact that it didn't sting the players in the way it might have. I think the George Best famous quote about every team had a hard man, but Leeds had 11. And while those players, I mean, you talk about the 7-0, I was watching the 5-1 against Man United from the time where Eddie Gray is absolutely phenomenal in that game. But they also, they were comfortable being bite your legs and being hard men, and they weren't stung by the criticism.
So we've touched on the Revieri a little bit there, but obviously this was the pinnacle, the highest point in Leeds history. And as Paul mentioned prior to this, they weren't really a big club in terms of success trophies at all. But in the Revie years, there were two league titles, an FA Cup, two European titles, plus an incredible host of near misses too. They could easily have won vastly more than they did. I mean, they've been greats, of course, previously. John Charles is probably the most notable example, who is covered in the magazine as well. But I mean, Paul, this obviously marks the beginning of Leeds as a force, doesn't it? There were a number of characters from this time. We've briefly mentioned a few of them already, who make fascinating subjects to write about, not least the manager himself, but also the key players. We've both written about players from that time in the magazines of Billy Bremner in your case.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Bremner, I mean, what a fabulous footballer, and what a shining example to anyone who wants to know what kind of influence a captain has upon a team. And I think what's often forgotten with Billy Bremner is he was a very, very skillful footballer. The guy had talent, and not only that, if you look at his goal scoring record, Bremner always scored goals in important games. He scored in the 65 Cup final. He scored in the Euro semi against Celtic. He scored in those epic semi-finals against Man United. Whenever you needed a player to stand up and deliver an important goal in a key game, Bremner was always your man. And I think that's why we trust him so much, because, you know, Bremner, like Leeds, identified this idea that if you want to play football, we'll play football. We're better than you. If you want to fight us on the pitch, we'll fight you on the pitch. We can do that better than anybody else, you know. Whatever the opposition threw at them, you know, Bremner made sure the team had the response to deal with that. And I think one of the things about that is often uncredited with Don Revie is the way he really made sure that Bremner didn't leave the club, because he wanted to build his new Leeds United around Billy Bremner. Bringing Bobby Collins to the club as a role model for Billy Bremner was a masterstroke, because Collins was so angry that Everton let him go. You know, I think I wrote in an article somewhere, you know, Bobby Collins could teach the Sicilians a thing or two about burning grudges, because, you know, he was so annoyed that Everton let him go. And he instilled into Bremner this idea that, you know, winning is everything. You know, even if apparently when they had five-a-side training matches, Revy initially split them up into an English team and a Scottish team. And you had to stop it because the injuries they were getting, they were kicking lumps in the games, were so bad. But there's that kind of infamous picture, isn't it, where Dave Mackay's grabbing Billy Bremner and everyone kind of hones in on that, Dirty Leeds. Then you look at the background to that. I mean, Mackay was 8 years older than Bremner at the time. So you could say, hang on, isn't that an example of bullying, you know, an older pro trying to put someone in his place? It then emerges that Mackay had retaliated. So Bremner retaliated to Mackay kicking him, and the shot was of Mackay reacting to that. Now, Mackay had just come back from a broken leg, so he was determined to make a point that you don't mess with me. And he said after the game, I thought I'd put Bremner in his place, but the little boo-boo-boo kept harrying me for the rest of the game and wouldn't give me a kick at the ball. So, you know, there's kind of a grudging respect there as well. But, yeah, I mean, to me, Bremner epitomised, you know, that how strong that cadre of Leeds United youngsters were. You had Lorimer, you had Spray, you had Reedy, you had Cooper, all coming through the ranks together, all growing up in the Leeds way. And now, Revy wanted that Leeds team to be like the Busby Babes, and you'd say to a large extent, although they didn't never quite got the same glorification as the Busby Babes for obvious reasons, that cadre of young footballers, there's probably, you could argue, that's the finest crop of British talent to come through on any team in recent times, because it was just a fabulous side. And I think there's a quote from the cricket commentator John Arliss in the mid-60s, when he says, if you did a poll of most football managers and asked them which player would you most want in your team, the general public would think did go for George Best. I can tell you, every manager to a man, if given the choice, would go for Billy Bremner. And I think there's no finer tribute than that.
I guess there's similarities there into how Roy Keane is probably perceived in more modern times of, you know, a fighter who was supremely talented as well, who led the team through example and strength that everyone would want on their side. And Billy Bremner, you're right. I mean, he was an absolute leader of the club. He was the epitome of it in many ways. I mean, I guess similarly, from the same era or slightly earlier, in his case, I wrote about Jack Charlton. Now, there's been obviously quite a lot said about him lately with his sad death. But I mean, he was a bit of a link to the time before Revy and the glory years that followed and then carried on by the likes of Bremner and co. after him. He formed a hugely significant defensive partnership with fellow North Easterner Norman Hunter at the back, and the success he got at Leeds got him acclaim in as well in Leeds, but beyond with England. I mean, like Bremner, I think he was at the right club at the right time for his style, his personality, character, and so on. It just fitted perfectly. Even though initially, I guess he had a few attitude issues. He wasn't necessarily first choice. He wasn't really in there that much until moves away, ironically, fell through. And then reconciliation with Revy led to him becoming the organiser, the leader of the defence, and it's a defence that became incredibly strong. And I guess the biggest testament to him in terms of Leeds is that he still remains to this day their all-time record appearance maker. One lone game ahead of Billy Bremner, assuming Wikipedia's stats are correct on all of this. But, you know, in Leeds history, so many of the most lengthy appearances, the biggest number of appearances are from that Revy era, given the sort of longevity of that particular team and the success they enjoyed. That Jack Charlton sits atop them all is kind of a big testament to him. In terms of what he gave the team and how he led them. But he also scored 96 goals from defence, which is quite astonishing. I guess a lot of that comes down to his height and how troublesome he could make himself to everybody who tried to get in his way. But he, like Revy and Bremner and various others, we could mention Johnny Giles and a few others from this time, Norman Hunter, Sprake and so on, became part of the DNA of the club beyond simply being a really, really good player. So I guess it's no surprise he was voted into the all-time Leeds 11 a few years back by Leeds supporters. I mean, James, coming to you as a younger fan of Leeds, with the Revy era being well into the past now, what does Revy and his team mean to you now?
I think that Revy really set the template of everything that's followed since. Of course, any successful period is going to be he's going to be the measuring stick of what happens after him. But I think even just the things that, even in bad times, the things that fans love and identify with were all formed in that time. I think that the idea of Leeds being a home for players that maybe wouldn't necessarily be popular or win any friends was formed in that time. It stayed through. So your Jack Charltons and your Bremners, even into the eras of your homegrown stars with like David Batty, they're very much in the mould of a Bremner, not having that edge to him and being quite blasé about winning friends in opposing clubs. But I think it's at times I think it's the Revy era. It's almost been. It's been daunting for teams in recent years because Leeds have remained a huge club and our status in the world hasn't married with what was achieved. But I think now we're in a position where we could sort of fulfill and continue, hopefully build on the legacy made all those years ago.
It's quite interesting you mentioned there the daunting sort of shadow. I mean, Joe, coming to you, I mean, is that... How's that impacted? I mean, has it been a significant impact on the teams that have followed? Obviously, there was a slump in the 80s, another high in the early 90s, and then a bit of a slump again more recently. Has the Revy era, I don't know, made a sort of unattainable goal for future Leeds teams?
There's definitely an argument to be had there because Leeds fans are very demanding. I mean, even during the darkest of times, we'd still... it could be said, wanted to get out of it with no, there was no way of us clicking our fingers and returning from League One to the Champions League. But this is the mentality that all the generations of Leeds fans in the past have told to their children, who've told to their children that Leeds are a huge team. So when when we have been through the dark times and fans, young fans, have constantly been told Leeds are a massive team, Leeds are a huge team, Leeds should be challenging in Europe and for the league title, and that's not been a realistic possibility, that's definitely been something that removed the fans from the club, in terms of this is what killed the fans' emotion towards the club, was this expectation of being a huge team and not being in the position to fulfil those expectations because of everything that was going on at that specific time. But just going back to specifics, just to Bremner, when there's a, especially with the centenary being last year, there was a lot of greatest moments and greatest everything and greatest matches, greatest players. The greatest player debate wasn't who was the greatest player, it was who was the second greatest player, because the greatest player was Billy Bremner, and then the second greatest player was where the debate was allowed to be started by Leeds fans, because Bremner is held in just such high regard by everybody that it's not even worth putting an argument up that says he was not the greatest player ever to play for Leeds. The same with Domrevy. The argument is not who was the best Leeds manager ever, it was who's the second best Leeds manager ever, because it's Bremner and Revy. They're the two statues outside the ground, and they're the two people who, they're the two places in Beeston, in where the ground is, where people go to lay flowers, where people go to pray, where people go to cry and go to celebrate. So it's those two and then the rest, really, from a Leeds perspective.
I mean, just got rid of that, Joe. I mean, Brennan was there for the best part of 16 seasons, wasn't he? I mean, yeah. It's a tremendous length of service, you know, which I don't think any modern footballer could come close to. And if we just could hold on two sliding doors moments from the Revy years. I know that when Bobby Collins signed for Leeds, Harry Castro, the Everton manager, had kind of left with the understanding that part of the deal would be that Billy Bremner would join Everton in the summer. And of course, there was no way that Revy was going to let that happen. But he was quite happy to let Castro think that for the deal to go ahead, which you have to say, it's a bit of a stupid manager on his part as well. And then you go back to the summer of 1973, you know, after the cup final defeat to Sunderland, and then the infamous defeat was at AC Milan in the Cup Winners' Cup final in Greece. And Revy, I think at that stage, had kind of decided he couldn't continue any further with the club. And he was approached by Everton to take over as the manager in the summer of 73. And the deal was all put in place, a whopping pay increase had been agreed. At the time, the Tory government had a prices and incomes policy, which meant that you couldn't take someone else's job and earn more than 5% of what they were earning. Everton offered a fabulous salary, about 250 grand over five seasons. The matter was raised in the House of Parliament by a certain young MP from Bolsover called Dennis Skinner, who demanded the Tory government investigated this flagrant breach of government pay policy. 21 hours later, Revy said he was staying at Leeds.
Well, speaking of shadows cast by Revy, of course, he would have been a very hard act to follow and would need a strong character. Well, Brian Clough, of course, controversially took over from Revy for a very short while anyway. And there's an article on that brief reign in the magazine too. But one thing he famously said about Revy's team was that they won through cheating or through not playing the right way, as he saw it. Now, as Leeds fans, I'm assuming, as we mentioned already about the attitude of others towards Leeds, I mean, this stems a lot from there. I'd assume Leeds fans couldn't care less about the manner of the victories, just merely the fact that they were victories. Does that, the criticism that Clough flagged, take anything away, or does it reinforce the pride in the team's history, James?
I don't think it takes anything away at all. I think that you only need to look at the calibre of the players, and you only need to look at the best performances of those teams to see, while there might have been a pragmatic core and a win-all-cost element of those players, there was absolute quality oozing through that side, and particularly the final title-winning season under Revy, where the brakes were let off at least as much as they were in that era. Leeds were... They might have been the hardest team in the league, and they might have always been pretty, but they were also the best footballing side in the league that year. And I think that further examination, I think Brian Clough took the job knowing that he had players to work with and knowing that he could do things. funny looking back, because I think his antipathy, there was such a mutual antipathy. It was almost like imagining Jose Mourinho taking over that Guardiola crop after he left. There was mutual hatred. So it was doomed to fail. But I don't think that it has a real case of marring the legacy at all.
No, absolutely. As the 1970s came to an end in the early 80s, the success obviously then faded away into several years in the league below before another peak came under Howard Wilkinson. So he came along in 1988, took Leeds to promotion from the second division, bringing through a hugely talented team that would in 1992 give Leeds their third and to date final league title. That was the final year before the Premier League, of course. So it was a first division title. I mean, Joe, this was a team inspired by the likes of Gordon Strachan, Eric Cantona, Gary McAllister, Gary Speed, among many others. He dragged Leeds from near the foot of the second division up to the first division league title just within a few short seasons, which is an astonishing achievement. Is this team perhaps not given the credit they are due, given their peak came before the Premier League began?
I think that's exactly the reason why this team does not get the credit it deserves. I think the fact that Sky took over the year after and the Premier League was created means that when records began, had not begun in this season. So the starting reference point for everything in modern statistics, modern football, comes just out of this team. And yeah, Leeds won the league season in 91-92, and then the following season came 17. And that's quite a drop-off from, I think that's the worst drop-off ever, actually, from a reigning champions the following season in the top division. Obviously, since records began, which is since 92-93. I think also the change of the back pass rule was a big influence with the team, because Leeds were not pretty side who won the league. It was 4-4-2, and it was, well, with Gary McAllister, it was a lot more fluid and a lot better, but generally Wilkinson's football was not something that was prime 2010 Barcelona. It was something a bit simpler, I would put it like that. And I think that playing 4-4-2 and keep going from the goalkeeper to the strikers and then back to the midfield in a long ball football is not something that people want in the general footballing world and mindset want to reflect on as something that was good and positive. I think especially with the way we're seeing football being played now out from the back and all, slow build up. Going back and saying that a 4-4-2 team that didn't use much of the pitch, that just went from one side to the other, I'm oversimplifying it, but it was basically that this is not something that you want to look back on and say was the pinnacle of English football.
No, I guess that's fair to say, but there's probably some similarities to attitude, I guess, if not style, to the Revy time of it. It's the winning that matters, and they held Manchester United off when Man United were at that point aiming to end their particular drought, and obviously that would come in bucket loads in the years to come. But at that point, Leeds were the superior team. It was a very strong team that year. I mean, it was simple but hugely effective football, wasn't it? Lee Chapman up front getting huge numbers of headed goals, I think. And it's not as if there wasn't a bit of flash in there as well. Gary McAllister and Cantona, of course, were providing some of that. I mean, James, for you, I know this is a little bit before your time, but is this Wilkinson team remembered fondly in Leeds because of the title win, I guess, or is it sort of, again, overshadowed by what had been prior to it?
They're certainly remembered really fondly by Leeds fans. I know that I think Wilkinson in general gets a bit of a hard time, but now I think partly because Ferguson came in his wake and the sheer quantity and the style in which our biggest rival had the success immediately after, as Joe said, being the year before the Premier League, and his style of play, I think he's seen as maybe a bit of a relic. But pragmatic though he may have been, he was a moderniser within the club, and probably his greatest legacy is the work that he'd done in the academy. which he didn't really bear the fruit of. It was the O'Leary era, but those players came through as part of the system that he was instrumental in modernising. I think that the real satisfying things looking back on that title win is how, well, for one, we halted Man United's coronation, and the media were ready to, you know, the Man United were having the success in the Cup Winners' Cup and FA Cup around that time. It was like, it was Ferguson's time, really, and we hijacked the party. And I think there are, on, albeit on a smaller scale, some real parallels with the Reeve era. And I think on a transfer level, I think Man United and Leeds have a storied history, but it's what you tend to remember is the often volatile, high-profile transfers that Man United, players that Man United have taken away from us, and the impact and the sour taste that it's left. But in the Reeve era, Johnny Giles was, you could make a case for the greatest signing we've ever had, coming from Busby's United and saying with that mentality, I think he actually said, I'm going to haunt them. And in the same way, Strachan was largely deemed surplus to requirements by Ferguson and came down with an absolute chip on his shoulder to Division Two and made them pay in the ultimate way. So it was the same way as Giles sort of made Busby pay, it was history repeating itself in the most satisfying way for Leeds fans.
Yeah, Gordon Strachan, I think he was hugely influential, wasn't he, in that time?
Yeah.
Famously powered on bananas and what such revolutionary health ideas that he seemed to be pioneering. But the influence he had on that team was huge.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I think Paul was talking quite a bit about Bobby Collins in the Reeve era. Reeve said he was his greatest signing, but a lot of it was just how the level of standard he lifted, either bringing the young players to higher levels of professionalism, or maybe some of the less talented players to levels they'd never been to. And I think Strachan had that effect hugely on that Leeds team as a result of playing around such a top class player. Some of you, like I said, Vinnie Jones and players like that benefited in the Division Two, the promotion season, so much from playing with a player like Strachan.
Well, Paul, obviously Eric Cantona was a key part of this league success as well. Now he obviously has become rather synonymous with a rival club, which we won't name here, but his arrival at the top level of English football was quite remarkable, the impact he had initially at Leeds. Obviously, he moved on and became a bigger name elsewhere, but how do you think his Leeds contributions specifically are regarded now in terms of how he impacted on this team to power towards the title win?
Yeah, but I don't want to speak for Joe James particularly here, but for Arsenal side looking again, I would have thought most Leeds fans would have been quite bemused that they never saw the best of Cantona, that he was allowed to go. And when you think, you know, his subsequent replacements with likes of Thomas Brolin and Lee Sharp, you know, so you couldn't say the money was well used to replace Cantona anyway. And I never quite understood, you know, what the issue was between Howard Wilkinson and Cantona. I mean, I don't think Eric Cantona fitted the model of what Howard Wilkinson for a top professional player should be. And I think that was always going to be a source of conflict. And, you know, James touched upon the rivalry between United and Leeds. You do wonder why on earth, if Leeds were going to choose to sell Cantona, why they sold him to Man United, because, you know, that decision really, really came back to haunt them. And going back to that chapter with inside, you know, they were a good footballing team. You know, they had a really strong midfield. They had with speed, McAllister, Strachan, you know, one of the best midfields, you know, that has been in recent times. The partnership of Chapman and Wallace up front was a classic big man, little man kind of partnership, but it worked really effectively. And you know, they had a good keeper in John Lukic. So I think it's one of the mysteries, I'm sure, for most Leeds fans, is why that team didn't go on to establish themselves in the first season of the Premier League, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't there a league game a few seasons later between Leeds and Man United, but I think where Lucas Radebe had to go and goal, Leeds got a draw at Old Trafford, and Ferguson says something like, you know, those players have been chasing the manager this season, they can play against like that against Man United, why haven't we been playing like that all season? And I think, you know, to me, that Leeds team should have gone on to be a major power in the Premier League, and why that didn't quite work out, I think disaster transfer dealings was part of the factor. I don't know whether finance was an issue, whether the board didn't buy into Wilkinson's vision? I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure from a Leeds fan's point of view, that must be a really frustrating period to look back upon and think, you know, if the Premier League had been a year earlier, Leeds would have been the first Premier League champions. And it's all sometimes sliding moments, isn't it? And to me, that Leeds team should have gone on to establish themselves with Eric Cantona at the fulcrum of us, rather than the team that ended up, you know, finishing 17th, I think you said, Joe, the following season, which is, you know, for an existing league champion, that is such an appalling way to follow your championship, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess issues in Europe that season as well. It wasn't particularly successful, was it? Knocked out by Rangers in the Battle of Britain, I think. And Rangers obviously went on and did rather well. And that it was closely fought. That could have been Leeds, of course, who could have progressed quite on to the latter stages. But I guess we'll never know. I mean, it did tail off quite rapidly. But Leeds were still there or thereabouts, at least staying in the top flight anyway. They weren't necessarily in contention over the rest of the 90s. But then the next peak comes along under David O'Leary. At the end of the 1990s, he took over after George Graham's departure in 98. O'Leary had been his assistant prior to then. Under O'Leary, Leeds never finished outside the top five, which is, consistent, strong, without necessarily troubling on the very top. It was a hugely talented young squad. I mean, he kept talking about his babies, didn't he? And it was a lot of talent coming through at this time. So Harry Kewell, Mark Viduka, Jonathan Woodgate, Rio Ferdinand, we've already mentioned previously, Alan Smith. There were some great young players coming through. It was a team that seemed poised to step up to the next level. Joe, coming to you on this, it's a great team for a while anyway. Why do you think they could never quite get the final step that they were after?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it? No, it was a great team. It was a team that you could fall in love with, as James and I did. As you say, a lot of young players attacking football. And then, obviously, we had the European seasons where I don't want to say took Europe by storm, but we got to Champions League semi-finals.
I think that's no
small feat. The reason we couldn't do it, you'd have to ask a better man than me. I would say it's just experience, wasn't it? They were a young team, and you can fly as high as you want when things are going your way. But after the couple of seasons where we just narrowly missed out, for whatever the reasons will be, maybe Paul or James will be able to tell you better than I can, then I don't want to jump ahead, but it all goes spectacularly wrong from there, doesn't it?
Well, let's keep it positive for now, right? What came next?
on the positive side of things, yeah, it was just a team that, you've got Harry Kewell was there, who was probably everybody's favourite player at the time, with Mark Viduka, the two Australians, and Alan Smith, all young, quick attackers, counter-attacking team, fluid football. And yeah, it was just a team full of young players who just captivated neutral audiences as well, I think, and got the people of Leeds really back into the seats at Elland Road, got the stadium rocking, got the city rocking as well. And as we've talked about, when Leeds is doing well, then the city really latches onto it. And European nights at Elland Road was something that we could all dream with. And especially after George Graham's football, which was not spectacular, you know, his 1-0s and 0-0 draws and defence first. O'Leary was really, well, if you score four, we'll score five. And it worked.
There's something about the exuberance of youth as well. I think that, I mean, obviously O'Leary guided them and he sort of gave them a tactical setup that actually could see them flourish and play an attractive style. But there's something about youth in particular that, you know, we've seen in various different teams across the years in different places that, I don't know, makes it a bit more captivating to the neutral, perhaps makes it a bit more attractive overall. I mean, for you, James, you mentioned it right at the start that this is the era that gave you your love for the club initially. What was it about these particular players and the team that sort of captivated you so much?
I think as a young, like as a youngster at the time, there was something so appealing about this team to a young person. Well, first of all, there was so many young, youthful, exciting flair players, but there was a rebellious, youthful quality to it. I think that there was a you look back on, there was a real surprise value to it as well. Leeds post, after the Wilkinson title reign, had been a solid but unremarkable Premier League team, not really in danger of challenge for major honours. And with Graham departing and O'Leary, who's fundamentally his assistant, when an assistant takes over from the previous manager, you kind of expect them to attempt to steady the ship and just continue what's been tried and tested. But he went full 180 with those players, and it was within a matter of weeks you could see a complete sea change within the team. And I almost think that it's almost an accidental success, if you can call it that, because it was a time of near misses. But you had a team that George Graham has unfondly remembered his years in Leeds for leaving us in the lurch and for his really it was the George Graham pragmatism without the success. But he did really organise a defence, and the likes of Lucas Radebe, who was, Wilkinson hadn't really worked out what his best position was. He was playing defensive, but it really established those kind of players as really top Premier League defenders. And then O'Leary came in, whereas Graham was quite reluctant to use the kids, and we had this talented group of players and just unleashed them on the world. And I think it wasn't really, I think we caught everyone unawares, and that was part of the thrill.
Well, sadly for Leeds, of course, this wasn't sustainable. The financial collapse following this particular high was a bit of a lesson in how not to run club's finances, unfortunately for Leeds. Gambling all on the assumption of maintaining Champions League status, which, you know, that's unreliable at best. I mean, Paul, I guess now it's Premier League money that far outweighs that on offer in the Champions League for the clubs in that height in the league. But clubs still need to heed this particular warning, don't they? I mean, I guess now it's maybe clubs on the cusp of relegation or promotion to the Premier League that are in this sort of similar scenario that Leeds were there, of banking all on keeping the big money year after year. It's still a lesson that's just as worthwhile today as it was then.
Yeah, I'm sure. As you're saying that, I think we all know as well that many clubs will still not learn that lesson and will be prepared to spend exillions of money to get themselves back into the Premier League. And I think you look back at that David O'Leary side as well, you know, similar to Wilkinson's side, maybe they were in Europe at just the wrong time, maybe in the Premier League just at the wrong time before the mega TV deals came in, before the mega book came into the game, and they would leave the kind of out of the... away from the top table at a time when all the big financial deals were coming in. And, you know, once again, it's another, you know, so what was it, the financial mismanagement that led to Leeds cascading down the divisions, or was it disastrous appointments in terms of managers? Was it the wrong policy in terms of releasing players, bringing in the wrong players? I'm sure there's a whole thesis out there waiting for somebody to write it. But, yeah, I mean... I'm kind of a bit of a football tradition. I like seeing the big teams in the top division. And to me, you know, I can never get my head around the fact that Leeds United win League One. It just never seemed right on any level whatsoever. And, you know, I think when they went to Old Trafford and Jermaine Beckford scored that goal to beat Man United 1-0, and it was just being portrayed as a giant killing act. And for someone who's grew up in the 60s watching football, Leeds winning Old Trafford is never a giant killing act. I'm sorry, it just never is. So it was just a real sort of... It just kind of adds a bit of a shock to me. And I think, you know, the phrase a sleeping giant is often overused, but in terms of population, in terms of geography, in terms of tradition, in terms of history since the Second World War, Leeds United are arguably, you know, the biggest sleeping giants in Europe, you know. And you just think, maybe Bielsa's the man, I don't know, only time will tell. But you just think, in the right hands, with the right ownership, with the right manager, you know, Leeds could be arguably one of, you know, a dominant force in English football for the next 10, 15 years. But once again, you know, everything comes around the circles. You know, like many here, I can't wait for Liverpool's dominance to be over, and you know, I'm just looking for somebody else to come in and take that place.
Well, speaking of potentially the right manager, Leeds' international profile is raised significantly thanks to Argentinian Marcelo Bielsa, which brings not just fine football, but also global recognition and attention to the club, which is quite a contrast of what's happened in the previous 16 years or so in the wilderness. And James, you've written about Bielsa in the magazine, haven't you? So you want to eulogise away?
I would love to. I think that the beauty about Bielsa is it's actually, in a strange way, that it's made the last 16 years. There's been many times when you've thought, what is the point? There are countless defeats to non-league or lower league opposition in FA Cups, the merry-go-round of managers, the revolving door of chairman that were, you know, charlatan chairman that really completely like eliminated any semblance of ambition at the club. And it, during that time, you would have given anything for a traditional manager, you know, like the ones we had, the Warnocks and McDermott's, that knew the division, to get us out of the league by any means necessary. But I think we then got the ultimate idealist playing, to be honest, the football that I've enjoyed above the Champions League, you're above the old area, the football that I've enjoyed most as a fan watching, it has made the last 16 years worthwhile. And I think if you would ask a Leeds fan, would you have liked to bounce back after 3 years, you know, say win that playoff final under Blackwell, but you won't have this. You won't have this period, or will you actually now endure what's happened to have the ride of the last few years? I think most fans would actually take the latter.
Well, that's quite a question, then, Joe. What's your thoughts on that?
I can only agree with. I would have the last 16 years over and over again if I could have the last three with Bielsa, because the way that he has turned the club around from the, as James said, the merry-go-round of managers, the constant changes of chairman or presidents, as they've wanted to be called, the constant influx of players from different lower leagues around the world, the constant hope thinking that maybe this is the season and finishing 15th again in the championship. And in 2 years, Bielsa has got us out of that division, playing a style of football that not even pundits and fans in the Premier League have seen before, let alone in the Championship. And I just think that the culture that he's created has turned the club back into what has turned the fans into a group of people who can idealise and hope that one day maybe we can take another step and go back to being what the older generations used to say about Leeds, what they used to tell their kids. Leeds are a big club. Well, now we can be again. Now that hope is there because of Bielsa. And it's his meticulous style of preparation. It's his focus on playing a certain brand of football and not deviating from it for any reason that has brought the fans back and has brought the love back to the club.
I come to you, Paul, on this one. I guess the success levels are obviously, of course, some levels below the Revere and Wiltonton and so on. But in terms of reputation and profile and general popularity, has Bielsa put Leeds into new territory here?
Yeah, I think undoubtedly. I think Bielsa's... When you think one of Leeds' most recent managers was Paul Heckingbottom, wasn't it? The Barnsley guy. So you've gone from Paul Heckingbottom to Marcus Bielsa. I mean that's some journey, isn't it? You know, that really is both ends of the managerial spectrum. But yeah, I mean, I think the esteem with which Bielsa's held by the current cadre of managers like Pep Guardiola and people, you know, shows what a coup it was for Leeds United to get Bielsa on board. And given that Bielsa doesn't stick around for longer clubs either, the fact he's been there for three seasons now, he's obviously bought into the kind of vision. And maybe he's been given a level of control of Leeds that maybe he hasn't been offered before as other clubs. And it could well be he might be viewing this as his last job in management, and he wants to leave like a lasting legacy in terms of, you know, establishing Leeds back up towards the top level of the Premier League. But yeah, it's been a masterstroke by Leeds and points of Bielsa. It really has. And yeah, I think the style of football, I think most neutrals these days, you know, if you're going through the what games are being shown live at the moment, so if your option, say, is Brighton against West Brom or Burnley against Wolves or something, but you see Leeds are playing somebody, I always watch Leeds. I mean, I saw the first game of the season against Liverpool, where, you know, the style of football, you know, this non-stop breaking out of attack, you know, I was just mega, mega impressed with. So yeah, I think on every level, Bielsa's been a massive coup for Leeds. And there's a kind of vaguely similar thing here with Everton having bought James Rodriguez, because I'm a firm believer that the South American market is really untapped in terms of marketing potential. Most Premier League teams focus on Asia as their big growth markets. And I think people have underestimated what the population of South America is and how fanatical South America is about football. And you know, if you check through the Spanish papers, Bielsa gets massive coverage in the Argentinian press, which means Leeds get massive coverage in the Argentinian press, which means Leeds get a whole new set of fans in Argentina. So on every level, marketing, legacy-wise, creating new fan base-wise, Bielsa has had such an impact compared to maybe poor Heckingbottom, maybe got a few more souvenir mugs sold in the market in Leeds at the weekend, I don't know.
Well, come back to you, Joe, on this particular time. You've written about one of the key players from recent times, and certainly in the promotion season, haven't you?
Yeah, I've written about Pablo Hernandez and his time at Leeds. He came in from Qatar under Gary Monk a few years ago now, and when he signed, the reaction to him coming in was one of positivity, but also it was that there was still that sense of anger from Leeds, because during the darker times in League One and the Championship, Leeds fans not only turned away from the club more, but they also turned angry. So any piece of news that was slight, that was not 100% positive, was met with an angry response. And Pablo Hernandez's transfer was one that was met with, as I say, positivity, but also a sense of we're signing a 30-year-old player from the Qatari League, and all respect to the Qatari League, but if you're looking to win promotion from the Championship, perhaps a player from there who's looking like he's on his last club or maybe his last few years of his career is not a player who you'd want to challenge for promotion. But he's done the complete opposite of what people had expected of him, and he's turned himself into, I think, the modern legend of Leeds. I think he is the best player we've had since the O'Leary days, really, in my opinion. Because I think what he's done for the club, I mean, his goal against Swansea last season was a real "where were you when" moment. Where were you when Pablo Hernandez scored against Swansea? And I just think what he's brought to the club, a sense of professionalism, a sense of calmness on the pitch and a real knowledge of the game and a knowledge how to play. I think a lot of parallels can be drawn with Gordon Strachan. And it might sound like a big jump, because we're playing in the Championship and we had Gary Monk and we had Howard Wilkinson with Gordon Strachan. But I think you can draw parallels of a veteran player who was brought into Leeds with a real sense of confusion, or not a sense of delight and hope about him. And despite this, he's managed to turn the club around, and it's his performances, from my point of view, last season and the season before, that have helped Leeds to be where they are. As much as Bielsa's done what he's done, he has used Pablo Hernandez as his talisman, as his star man on the pitch, playing either in the middle or as a playmaker on the right. Pablo has been the epitome of Bielsa's football for the fans, and I just think he is the modern legend of Leeds United.
Well, that's quite a statement. Well, in terms of, well, coming to you, James, a final word on Bielsa then. I mean, we've talked about the era, where it may be going, the sort of style, as Joe's talking there, one of the most significant players in the team as well. But in terms of Bielsa himself, where do you think he sits in terms of Leeds managers?
Well, it's almost inappropriate in some ways to ever compare anyone to Ravy, because we were, not only is he by far our most successful manager, and it's going to be very hard for anyone to get even within that realm, but he took us from, we weren't even a big club before Ravy. And while his achievements, you know, on paper, he had, you know, Howard Wilkinson actually won the top division, as it was, you know, he won the equivalent of the Premier League. And it might, I think I put in my article, that it may lack certainly to people that haven't watched it, just on paper, it may lack the glamour of even O'Leary's Champions League run. I think that the actual, anyone that has lived it and anyone that has seen the transformative effect he's had on a club that were, a set of fans that were losing faith, and a club that you wonder how many years do you have to be in the wilderness before you stop becoming a big club? How long do you have to remain asleep before you stop being a sleeping giant and just you're just a marginalised club? And I think that it's the greatest example of coaching in terms of getting the best out of players that I've ever seen. I mean, when he came, I can remember obviously the excitement of having seen what he'd done, that his Bilbao team did to Man United in the Europa League all those years ago, and that Chile team in the World Cup. There was a definite excitement. But when the transfer business was done, I can remember saying to my friend that I go at the games with, doesn't matter how good a manager you are, if you're going to play Liam Cooper at centre-half, who was maligned by the fan base, that's not a viable way of getting promotion. The sales, I mean, Calvin Phillips has become an England international and an all linchpin. Most of the fans were gutted that we sold his equivalent player, who was Ronaldo Vieira, to Sampdoria. He was seen as the inferior of the two. So that the way he has brought the levels of every player to a man up has been bewildering to watch. And the excitement for the future with Bielsa is, now that we have money, now that there are Rodrigos and Rafinhas and actually established talented players coming in, what levels can he get out of those? So I think that he's, you know, might be controversial to say, but I think anyone but after Reeve, he is in the argument to be up there as number two, definitely number three.
Excellent. I mean, it's an interesting statement, given that obviously Wilkinson did win a league and O'Leary got you to a Champions League semi-final. But I guess that stands testament to the sort of revolution he's brought about and the sheer rise that he's been behind and the general perception of Leeds beyond the city as well, of course. Well, time is against us as always. We're well past the hour marker already. So, but as a final question to each of you, I'm going to ask you all to name who you see as the most significant player in Leeds history. If I can ask you not to say Billy Bremner, though, so that we don't all just say that, because that would be a little bit dull. It doesn't have to be the best player or even the personal favourite, but who you see is significant to the club. So, Paul, coming to you first.
Yeah, well, to me, that's quite easy, Aidan. To me, it's Bobby Collins. He was one who set the template for Leeds United. He was the one who molded Billy Bremner to play the way that he did. So, to me, Leeds United don't sign Bobby Collins. Don Revy's Leeds United never takes shape. So, to me, it's Bobby Collins.
Excellent. And to you, Joe?
I would say someone who we've not mentioned in the podcast, but he does get a mention in the magazine. I'd say John Charles. And he was the first legend of Leeds United, coming in the 50s as a 17-year-old, and he left for a British record fee some years later to go to that great Juventus team with Boni Berti and Sivori. And I just think that I think he came third in the World Player of the Year rankings in 1958, was it? And he played in both centre-back and centre-forward for Leeds, and he was the man who I think he gave Leeds a presence that then made it possible for Revy to come on and even build on the reputation that he'd given Leeds. I mean, there's an argument to be had there that Revy built it from nothing, but I would argue that Leeds's perception from people in England, at least, was built on John Charles pre-Revy. So I would definitely go for John Charles.
Excellent. Yeah, you're right there. There is an article dedicated to John Charles in the magazine. We haven't particularly covered him here today. So, yeah, cheers for that, Joe. And James, to you as well.
I think while they were both really convincing arguments, to go different and pick one individually, I'm going to go Jack Charlton. I think of the Reeve, he's the one of that golden team that predates the Reeve era. And he, being, he was assigned by Major Frank Buckley, and being that he was really came through a club with no ambition, really no direction, was almost at loggerheads with Reavy and had a quite a rocky relationship with him. Looked like one point was going to go to Man United, and it could have been a different time. And then came through, made up with Reavy, apologised, and then became an absolute cornerstone of that team, enjoying all the success through the following decade. I think that I think his career really epitomises the rise of Leeds from being a club in a rugby league town to being a force in England.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's a great picks, everybody. Hopefully this has given all our listeners a good taste of what's to come in the Leeds magazine. As we mentioned, there is plenty more that we haven't even really had the chance to go into here, as well as John Charles. There's Clough, there's things on the stadium. There's an article on the 16 years away going down to League One and all of that as well. So plenty more to get into that we haven't even been able to cover here. It will be released for orders on the 4th of January. That will be alongside another magazine, actually, our Maradona Epic. So a unique These Football Times double magazine launch to get your teeth into there. So thank you to my excellent guests for a great discussion today. It's been great to talk about a club of such significance that has well and truly risen from the ashes again. Paul, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Aidan, and thanks for hosting the show sumptuously again. And can I just thank James and Joe for giving the modern Leeds supporters insight into the club. It's really refreshing to see how well versed you are in the club's tradition and history, and how much the appointment of Bielsa has enthralled you and rekindled your love for the club.
No, exactly. That is really good to get the full range of timescales on here. We've got all the eras covered, haven't we? So it's great to get the modern perspective. So yes, James, thank you to you too.
Yeah, no, thanks. I've absolutely loved being on. It's been great hearing the insight and perspectives of all three of you. And I think that the fact that we're doing this podcast in Leeds is actually a viable release for These Football Times says it all about where we've come in the last 2 years, and I think that's the biggest thrill for me, that we actually matter to anyone outside of our own fan base once again.
Well, there you go. You see, it's not all the other acclaim or international recognition. It's the fact that you've got a TFT magazine about Leeds. That shows you have arrived, you are back. Well, you finished with a Leeds accent then, so thank you, Joe, for your contribution.
Ballon d'Or.
cheers, Joe, for your contributions.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, as Jim said, it's been a good chat through all the years of Leeds, and yeah, looking forward to seeing the magazine and seeing Leeds magazine alongside all the other great clubs that These Football Times have done.
Excellent. Well, like I say, the magazine is launched on the 4th of January for pre-orders, but as ever, it's sure to sell out fast. And when it's gone, it is gone. So get your orders in early. But for now, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again next time, I hope. Thank you and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.